Hi, everybody. I'm Blind Cool Tech. This is Mary, and I'm also going to be putting this on my podcast. I thought it would be a good idea to do a series on how to set up a PC from start to finish. And what brought this about was the fact that I decided to order a laptop from Beyond Sight. And having set up a number of Windows PCs in the past, I thought, well, I don't know how this laptop is going to be configured when I get it. It may already have everything pretty much set up so that it comes up in Windows Desktop right when you start out. But I have set up a number of Windows computers that did not do that. And very often if you buy a PC from a store, from a website, it's going to come up in a mode in which it's going to have to configure itself. And I thought, just for fun, I would go through the notes that I took when I set up my laptop, my old laptop. Actually, I have a couple of series of notes here. I've got one that involved the current desktop PC that I'm using. And I also, when I got my first Windows Millennium desktop about 5 years ago, I did some setting up with that. And I've also had to deal with work PCs, but they came pre-installed with everything, so you didn't really have to do anything except type a password, because they had their own configuration, and there was a department at the lab that did a lot of the stuff for you. So if you were not real conversant with PCs, but you had a job to do, you could just turn on the PC, and it would come up with a question, type a user ID, or actually just a password. They decided what your user ID was. Since the company owned the PCs, they could set things up the way they wanted, and all you had to do was type a password and you were in.
I should add here that as a blind computer user, though, it took me a good 2 or 3 days to configure that PC to make it work properly with JAWS. It was quite an adventure, and I had to warn my colleagues that I'd be offline for a few days because had to configure JAWS, had to configure all the Windows stuff that went along with it to make it look like classic mode, and had to configure the software that my company insisted that I use all the time, because you had to have specific Braille settings and scripts and stuff to make JAWS work correctly with that software. So there was a lot to do.
So, anyway, I thought this would be an intro session, since I don't have the laptop yet. And I thought that I would just give a little bit of a general idea of what happens when you actually get a PC that's not configured for blind people. And then when I get the laptop, I will do a podcast in which I open the box and look at it for the first time and all that. That's kind of fun to do. Most PCs these days have Windows already on the hard drive in a separate partition. There are good things about this and there are bad things. One of the good things is that you don't have to worry about
installing Windows from a CD.
But the bad thing, the main bad thing, is what if your hard drive decides to go bye-bye and you don't have a copy of Windows, you're going to have to get a copy of Windows on a CD. If you buy a hard drive from the store or someplace, it may not have Windows pre-configured on there, and the thing may just be totally blank, and you're going to have to probably format the hard drive anyway to get it started. So the PCs that I got, one of them did not have a Windows CD, but it had Windows on the desktop PC. My laptop, however, had Windows on a separate partition, but it did not have a CD that came with it. One thing you might want to consider before you do anything else, though, is to see if you need to adjust the BIOS settings. This is something that a sighted person is going to have to do if you don't have a way to access a PC screen directly. There have been some discussions about how to set up the BIOS with some kind of external speech device. I have an Opticon, so I was able to look at the BIOS before I did anything else. In order to find out how to get to the BIOS, generally what you do is you turn on the PC and then right away you push the F1 key, or sometimes it's the Alt key, sometimes it's Control, sometimes it's something else. And the menus are generally in a text format, although now they're working on getting the menus in a GUI setting, in a GUI interface, and the mouse will be able to be used to choose things, which for a blind person, that's not going to help us any. But usually there isn't too much to do as far as getting the BIOS settings working. Generally, you don't have to mess around with that. I've been quite fortunate the last few PCs that I've had, I haven't had to deal with those. So when I turned on my old laptop computer for the first time, I took some notes, and the first thing that it did was it converted the C drive to an NTFS file format. That was just built in, that was part of the procedure, and that's what it did. And then it rebooted, and then the music came on, and what happens when music comes on is generally it's trying to verify that you're hearing the music and seeing the screen, but I just let it run for about 5 or 10 minutes and it finally turned off. And then it works for about 45 minutes, probably installing stuff on the hard drive from this separate partition. And then it came up with a message that said, "Let's spend a few minutes setting up the PC." And it works some more and starts installing Windows so that it can start doing the GUI interface and all that kind of thing. And then eventually I pressed enter, and after about 10 minutes, the bottom left of the screen said click next. So I did an Alt N. And then it asked about location and language and the keyboard type. Everything was highlighted correctly, so I pushed Alt N. And then we got to the license agreement. And I'm not really sure what I did to get out of that. I'm looking at my notes, trying to see if there was anything that I did. I don't think that I did anything except an Alt N. But in previous editions of Windows, I would have to push a lowercase a and then a lowercase y and then an Alt N. And I think in another situation it was an Alt A and an Alt Y and an Alt N. But eventually I got out of there, wanted to know more about the language and the keyboard and the style of keyboard that I had and location and all of that. And probably at this point I could have pushed a Windows key U and gotten Narrator up and working, but for some reason it didn't seem to work that way. So it had all the information correct, so I didn't need to type that. And then it wanted to know the PC name, and I think I just let it default. And then it asked if the PC would connect to the internet. I chose LAN. And then it went into the registration thing. We had to fill in your name and your email address and all that stuff, and Alt N to get past that. And then it wanted to know country and state, and then I did an Alt N to get past that and asked if I wanted to register. But it insisted on dialing, so at this point I had to hook up my modem to the internet or to the phone line, and so it would dial and register. I suppose I could have skipped all this, but you know, that's what it did. And then it asked about whether I wanted to sign up for email information and ownership stuff, and I skipped past all that stuff. I think I did an Alt N. Internet setup, it wanted to see if I wanted to do that. Who will use my PC? And then there was an Alt F for finish. Eventually I got to that. And later I went back and registered and set up all the internet stuff. A couple other things to get checked are the product key. You have to generally know what the product key is. for your version of Windows, and also it goes through and checks your time zone during the setup. That's just something that happens. Also, with Windows XP and probably future versions of Windows, you're going to have to activate Windows. It'll remind you for probably about a month, and then if you haven't registered Windows by then, you will not be able to do anything after that month until you activate Windows. I suppose the reason they're doing this is to prevent piracy and all this kind of stuff, so that's another little thing you have to deal with. And also, Microsoft wants you to register with them, and they want to know if you want any kind of promotional stuff emailed to you. And very often your computer manufacturer will do the same thing. They'll ask you if you want to get promotional material from them. So it's just generally a lot of stuff that they want to know when you're installing Windows and setting up your PC for the first time. It's a one-time deal. Once it's done, it's pretty much done forever, at least until something goes wrong and then you may have to reinstall. But it's just something that once you get it out of the way, you're generally done with it. The next thing that you're going to want to do once you get Windows up and working and you're able to get to the desktop is to install your screen reader. And if you're like me, once you've installed the screen reader, you want to get all the options and adjustments set up. For example, one thing with JAWS that they do is they got these tutor messages which tell you to get out of this box, press blah blah, you know, and I don't like hearing that. I also like my voices to be all the same. I like it to be reed and about 63% pitch. I don't like a real high-pitched stuff, and I don't like the pitches to change every time it reads a different type of message. And I also like certain braille settings. I'm very, very particular about how braille is displayed. So I generally install my screen reader and I get everything set up according to my JAWS preferences, or you could do that for Window Eyes or HAL. I don't know how HAL does it. I know that Window Eyes has one particular menu that covers a lot of the screen reader preferences for Window Eyes. JAWS kind of has it scattered in a configuration manager and it is kind of a mess, but once you learn where it is and you do it. And once that's done, there are certain things that you can do, and generally your screen reader manufacturer will give you some training on this regarding your preferences for Windows. For example, I like the classic view of Windows. I don't like the new XP rendering of how the control panel looks and the start menu and all that. I like the classic view, and I like it as classic as possible. And there's a long, long description of what to do in JAWS, and this is the stuff that Freedom Scientific has recommended. What I did was they gave a really good description of this with JAWS 4.5, and I took that information from the cassette that I had and copied it onto a CD. And that worked very well. I can just go through that and be done with it. I think they were using Windows XP Pro. Windows XP Home is a little bit different, but generally it's pretty much the same process. And at this point, you've got your screen reader installed. You've got your settings set up for the screen reader the way that you like them. I configure things very, very heavily and very thoroughly, so generally a lot of this takes probably a good hour and a half. And then you go through for probably about a half an hour or so and you configure Windows the way that you like it. As I said, I like the classic mode and the classic way of doing things. Once you get all that done, then you're ready to start installing software, and this is going to be kind of interesting. You install your antivirus and your firewall, and then any software drivers for any of the hardware that you're going to connect to your USB ports or your other ports. My external hard drives have drivers that need to be installed so that the hard drives can be accessed, and so that's a major, major priority because a lot of my software is, and especially in the license information, is on my external hard drive. So that needs to be done. And once you're done with that, you can set up your internet settings, which is done in the control panel, and also your email settings. You may have a specific email program that you like to use. Even if you just use Internet Explorer and Outlook Express, there are certain things you're going to need to do, such as setting up your PopMail account or your Internet Explorer options. For example, I like my Internet Explorer to come up with a blank screen. I don't like dealing with a home page. And so setting that up, it doesn't take too long, but it's something that needs to be done. Setting up a PC like this is very much like moving into a new neighborhood. Everything is unfamiliar, and you kind of have to get used to the way things are. And once you get all this stuff done, you can start installing all the software that you use all the time onto your PC. And I kind of compare that to moving into a new house and putting in the furniture the way that you want it and making it look like home and doing all of the different little things that you need to do. It's just something that for a while it's a bit of a nuisance, and especially if you got a really good firewall installed and you've got software filtering installed, it's going to bother you every time that a new piece of software comes in. And it's going to say, do you want this to access the internet? Do you authorize it or do you not authorize it? Do you block it? And it's going to keep asking you this kind of stuff until you tell it for every piece of software that accesses the internet it's okay to authorize, or maybe it's not okay. Generally, it's going to be okay because by this point you've got the firewall installed, you've got your antivirus installed, and you've got some other things installed, and everything is pretty well set up. So it's just double checking to be sure that the software that it puts on your machine is going to be able to access what it needs to. And at the same time, it's going to keep the bad stuff out. Also, one thing that you're going to need to install, if you've got a spam filter, which I do, I use SpamNet. I have the version for Outlook Express. They do have it for Outlook, and I believe they got other versions for other types of email clients. When you access your email for the first time, you're probably going to have to install any spam catchers, and that's something that is definitely something you're going to need to do. And hopefully you've got all of your software and all of your emails that contained all the license numbers and the activation keys and all that stuff stored somewhere so that you can get to it. If you don't, you're going to be running all over the web trying to find a lot of stuff that you had on your other machine. So that's something that really needs to be planned for, is just have all this stuff available and it'll go a lot smoother. Another thing that's going to happen is eventually you're going to have to upgrade your version of Windows to the most current Microsoft version. Generally, if you've got Service Pack 2, it's not going to be too much of a problem. But if you have a PC that maybe you bought from somebody else and it still has the old Windows XP Service Pack 1 on it, for example, then you're going to have a lot of upgrades to do. And that's going to involve going into Windows Update, and even Windows Update itself is going to have to be upgraded because they've done some work on that. So that's going to be a long, involved process. It generally is a bit of a nuisance, but once you get caught up with all that, then it generally keeps track of itself if you've got that set up. Some people don't like Microsoft to just come on your machine and do its own thing. Some people like to have some control over it, so that's something that's going to need to be adjusted also. And then your podcatching software, if you use it, is going to have to be installed and adjusted. So that's something that is definitely going to be a must. And if you've got any other drivers for any other software that you use, you're going to have to put the drivers on before you put the software on. For example, If you use OpenBook, you're going to have to put your scanner driver on first, and then OpenBook is going to take a while to install. And it's very particular about how it does it. It's pretty painless, but it is time-consuming. So there's a lot that's involved in getting a new PC up and working, and it's not an easy thing, and it's not a fun thing, but if you just kind of wade through it, it'll happen eventually. It's just one of those things. It takes a while for you to get settled in with a new machine. Even if your keyboard looks similar, there are going to be keys on there that are different, so you're going to need to figure that out too.
If you work from home, then of course all of your work-related stuff is going to have to go on your new PC if you plan to use that PC for work. Most of the time, all of the work-related stuff that you would need would probably be in one place. And one thing that I liked.
What I was working was that I was able to put a lot of my work stuff on there because by the time I got my internet connection working and everything, I was able to go up to one place and download everything. Granted, some of that stuff was really big. I think it took about half a gig of software for my PC to get all the work stuff on there because we had a terminal emulator. We had Lotus Notes, we had Lotus Smart Suite, we had I don't know what else. And it just took a while. We also had our AT&T network client, which was the thing that hooked the PC up to the company's intranet. And that was definitely a must if you're going to put all of your Lotus Notes stuff on there. You had to be hooked up to the intranet first. So everything had to be done in its own sequence, and that was just something that was required, and it took a lot of time. I would spend hours. Every time I got a new PC, I'd spend hours installing all this work stuff. So one of the good things about doing this now is no, I won't have to put all that stuff on there, which will be really, really nice. But it still is a lot of stuff. When you do podcasting and you do things like Studio Recorder and other things, you really have to take the time to install this stuff, and it really is a lot of stuff. If you have any financial software like check writing programs, you're going to need to put that on there, and then you're going to have to set up your printer. Now that's another little goodie that's if you have a printer that has drivers, and most of them do, then you have to set up your printer drivers. It's just amazing all the detail that goes into setting up a PC. You just don't think about it until you actually have to do it. So I'm sure I left some things out. I know that I can't remember everything, but I wanted to at least give an intro to what happens when you turn on a PC for the first time. So the next podcast is going to be a discussion and a podcast involving what happens when I get the laptop, and I'll go through the opening the box and taking the stuff out. I get so excited when I open up a new PC or a new piece of electronic stuff. So it won't be just me talking, it'll be me doing stuff, and I'll probably be recording when I turn on the PC for the first time and see what happens, and hopefully Windows will come up and I won't have to go through all this pre-installation stuff. So anyway, thank you for listening. I hope that some of this was educational, at least. I kind of rambled on a little bit, but having done this a number of times, I figured, well,
There may be some people out there who haven't done this more than once or twice.
some people who really haven't done it at all and don't know what's going on with this stuff. So if you have any questions, you can email me. I'm not on the BCT list anymore, so you'll have to contact me through email. Sometimes I'm in the chat room on the BCT site, so you can ask me questions about that then if you want to. My email address is Mary Emerson, MaryEmerson, at sbcglobal.net. That's sbcglobal. And I hope that this is of some help to somebody out there, and contact me if you have any questions. And thank you for listening.